From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. In a moment, he had top secret clearance, and former Colonel John Alexander talks about UFOs, myths, conspiracies, and realities. And next hour, we're going live to Amsterdam to talk with David Wilcock, Divine Intervention. Here's what's happening. If you're on the social networking site Twitter, well, it might be a very good time to log in and change your password. That's right. It's been announced that tens of thousands of Twitter users' names and passwords, possibly over 55,000, were leaked and posted publicly on the internet. Twitter has launched an investigation into that security breach. As we continue to report, after a very eventful March, April was fairly quiet in terms of solar activity, but with the arrival of a new sunspot region on the Earth side of the sun, solar activity could begin to heat up once again. This month, researchers at NASA's Solar Dynamics Lab called this new region a monster sunspot. It's 60,000 miles across. Professor James McCanney taught computer science and astronomy as well as other math classes. He's with us. Well, here we go. A little activity on the sun, James, huh?
George, yeah, it's starting up. And this sunspot is one of the larger in terms of historically over the last 100 years. It's ranks up there with some of the largest ones. The largest sunspot that we know in history was around 1947, which was about three times larger than this one. But still, when they get this size, pretty much anything can happen. And it's starting to rotate towards a point at which it could throw some solar storms our way. Right now, two flares are on their way to Earth. We don't know what's going to happen with those yet. They're still on the way from this sunspot. So it's interesting. We'll have to wait and see.
Why the increased activity, James? What's going on with the sun?
Well, this is the normal rise in the solar activity as we go into the next solar cycle. But I know we were on the show. I was on the show many times talking about the lack of sunspots.
That's right.
For about 3 years, and then all of a sudden, here they come again.
They're making up for it.
They might be making up for it.
All right, James. James' website, by the way, jmcanneyscience.com. You will find it linked on our Twitter feed. Assuming we've changed our password. Well, it was a ziplining accident that went from bad to much, much worse. It was one of the saddest stories I've ever heard. In just 1 week, Amy Copeland, 24 years old, was enjoying a trip kayaking down a creek with some of her friends in Carrollton, Georgia. Went out there to have a good time. But when Amy stopped to ride on a homemade zip line across the water, you know what those are, you just hold on to those things, you're way up in the air, and you just go sliding across to the other side. The line snapped, and out a large gash in her left calf, okay? Cut her really bad. So the University of West Virginia graduate of psychology is now in critical condition because what apparently happened was after she cut that leg and fell into part of the water, a very flesh-eating bacteria entered her body through the wound in her calf, causing her left leg to be amputated. She's now in critical condition. Initially, she went to the emergency room in Carrollton. They just stapled her up with 22 staples. They gave her some pain medication. They sent her home. Well, she returned the next day. She said, look, this pain is worse. It's horrible. Well, they gave her more pain pillers, sent her home again. The pain didn't go away. When she arrived again, an ER doctor diagnosed her with the flesh-eating disease of the deep layers of the skin, and they had to amputate, and as I said, she's now in critical condition. Can you imagine that? One in six cancers, 2 million a year globally, are caused by largely treatable or preventable infections, according to new estimates. The Lancet Oncology Review, which looked at the incidence rates for 27 cancers in 184 countries, finds that four main infections are responsible there. It may be possible to use stem cell shielding to protect the body from the damaging effects of chemotherapy. Early results from U.S. trials suggest. Now, chemotherapy drugs will kill some cancer cells, but they also kill a lot of healthy tissue, and that's not good. Noted hairstylist Vidal Sassoon, known for creating that modern bob cut, has died at the age of 84. He died in Los Angeles, apparently of natural causes. The British style icon opened his first hair salon in 1954. It grew into a worldwide chain with locations in New York and L.A. Now, here's a strange story. You've seen the movie The Blair Witch Project, right? We've talked about it on this show. The executive producer of The Blair Witch Project has filed for bankruptcy, claiming that all he has to his name is $900, and he's got about $132,000 in debt. Blair Witch, one of the most profitable movies ever based on return on investment. The movie's principal photography cost $25,000. It went on to make $248 million worldwide. Unclear just what went wrong. The U.S. Postal Service floating a cost-cutting plan that would keep thousands of rural post offices open. That's good. They're going to cut down full-time staff all around the country. They're going to reduce hours. But their goal is to keep the rural post offices opened up. Italians, by the way, many in debt or jobless, have chosen now to commit suicide to get away from their problems, happening on a regular basis in Italy. 10 hard-hit housing markets are now recording double-digit price increases. And now they're beginning to say that they think in most of these markets, housing prices will grow 4% a year over the next 5 years. Catherine Austin Fitz with us. Catherine, I just don't know. It's strange. How could it go up when things seem to be so bad for people?
Well, you see pockets, George. So there are pockets that are doing well, but I'm skeptical of a 4% rise for a couple of years. Unless, of course, the central banks print. We have Operation Twist running out this summer, and it is an election year. So if the central banks are printing as much here as they are in Europe, we could see rises of across the board in all tangibles, including housing.
What is fueling this primarily? Investors looking for houses?
It depends on the market. You have certain markets where the economy is strong, so technology is strong and oil and gas is strong. So Texas and Silicon Valley, you see the housing markets relatively strong. You haven't seen a lot of drops where you are out in L.A. So there are pockets. That's one thing where the economy is strong. But the second thing is we're seeing an unprecedented increase in money supply, but it's only going to certain kinds of people. And that's where the markets are holding strong. But I agree with you. The broad middle class is really, really hurting. And I don't think that's going to change. If anything, the big question is what are the federal, state, and local governments going to do with respect to taxes, which could hit the middle class even harder. Same with what's happening with their pension funds. So I think 4% a year is pretty aggressive.
I agree with that. Catherine, thank you so much. If you go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, scroll down to almost the bottom, you'll see a segment there called In the News. One of the stories there has to do with a very mysterious winged being caught on camera. It's one of the strangest videos I've seen. Go take a look at it. It looks like it can be possibly an angel. And if you're able to pause that video, pause it, you will see some kind of apparition, some kind of humanoid-looking creature inside this winged light. It's really strange. We've got it there for you at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, just what's really going on? UFOs, myths, conspiracies, and realities. Dr. John Alexander joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Dr. John Alexander, a Green Beret combat veteran, was a colonel when he retired from the U.S. Army, expert in non-lethal weaponry and U.S. Special Operations Command and Army Science Board. He is widely published in several areas. His latest work, UFOs, Myths, Conspiracies, and Realities. And I had the luxury of reading it and also commenting on his book on the cover and on the inside. And John, you did a great job with this, my friend. How are you?
Well, pretty good. Been a long time since we've talked.
Absolutely. It is. You seem very busy these days.
Yeah, for retired, this is awfully busy.
You're not retired. You may think you are, but you're not.
No, I formally retired twice, first from the Army and then Los Alamos, and I quit retiring because you get busier every time.
John, before we get really rolling here, your background, I think, is so important, so critical to us, and I want people to get a better understanding. I mean, here you are, former Green Beret. You've got an incredible military background. How did you get involved in studying the possibility of UFOs?
Well, my original dates back to 1947, because I'm actually old enough to remember some of those things. So, from the earliest reports, I've always had an interest. But then when I was in the military, this was in the early 80s, and we had a lot more flexibility and money than we do now. And met some folks, and you always heard the rumors, lots of rumbling and whatnot, and said, well, let's try and find out what it is. So I put together a group, a multi-agency, all the services, the intelligence community, aerospace industry guys, and said, let's talk about it. So that's where it started.
So you've studied them for a long time. Are you at a point now where you can conclude what you think is going on here?
Well, the very first line of my book, I think, is important, and that is UFOs are real. And I don't equivocate there. I'm talking about physical things that transit our universe from time to time. They're hard. They're picked up on every sensor system we have. I end by saying, whatever this is, it is more complex than we ever imagined. It's just not going to be any simple solutions.
Why complex?
Well, first of all, I don't know what a UFO is. And by that, I mean, you got little balls of light. We've got hard craft, like what we've seen over Phoenix, for instance, a mile across or more, and everything in between. And so what's the variability? Which of these do you want to study?
Well, that's a good point. I've ruled out these things being dimensional. I think if they do exist, they're coming from other planetary systems in places like that. There are many, John, who claim that governments are covering this up. You say otherwise. How come?
Yeah, I do. And one of the things I point out is that people in the government are just like people in civilian life. So what we know is that, 7% or so of them have actually witnessed what they believe to be a UFO. But institutionally, it's a bigger problem. And I keep going back to the compared to what. You were detailing some of the issues in the lead-in on the news as to all of the things that are going on that the government is responsible for. So for them to divert resources gets to be problematic at best.
Do you think a lot of scientists just simply ignore UFO information?
Oh, absolutely. They would prefer it go the way they do. Frankly, do not like mysteries. Unfortunately, many scientists, they want to push the envelope a little bit. But when you find real game-changing kinds of things, as this would be, really don't like to hear it.
But you have said, John, that a confirmation of a UFO sighting, a really definitive confirmation where no one has any doubts, isn't going to change anything. How come?
Well, first I want to point out, when we talk about disclosure, those sorts of things have happened. We've had several presidents come forward, Gorbachev, generals, and all that, have stated that these events are real. You can take any one of the, more famous ones. I like the Phoenix Light one, because that the main incident that we talked about started here. I'm in Las Vegas, and as you know, it started in Henderson, went down over Kingman, Prescott, Phoenix, down to Tucson. We know the governor actually saw it. So those kinds of incidents have happened, and we tend to put our head in the sand. The other piece of that, of course, is it's not a singular event. And too many of these that the skeptics try to wish away we find out, no, it was not just a one-time event. There were things that went on for days, months, and sometimes years.
So you believe that these objects, whatever they may be, are coming from other planetary systems?
I frankly think that what they call the extraterrestrial hypothesis is too simple. And that, could some of them come? You'd have to think that we must be on the star visitation map or something for all of these different kinds of crafts and, reports of entities and things like that, to just be coming, from there to here. I also point out that, we have had interactions between humans and sentient non-human beings throughout human history, and UFOs are just kind of a new piece of that.
Well, but are you saying, though, John, that you simply just don't know where they're coming from? I mean, could they be coming from within this planet?
I think that's absolutely true. I think one of the problems that I have is, and people ask me what my agenda is, and I put out, it's really quite simple. We need to make it permissible for scientists and our top brains to get involved in studying these things without risking their reputation or careers. I don't think we're at the point of asking the right questions yet, much less, coming up with pat answers.
Well, that very well could be. What do you think about NASA? Where do they stand with all this, John?
Depends on who you talk to. NASA as an institution is overtly hostile. And
true.
You pose questions to them, and many people have. You go on their website, and they're just quite hostile to the possibility. You have a number of astronauts. Story Musgrave is one who's quite open to the possibility, also states he's never seen anything. It's not an institution I would turn to quickly, although they're really quite open about most of their material.
Is there any area within government that you think could be beneficial or helpful to us?
That is not a simple question as it sounds. What I'd like to see is where we can get scientists to study it. So any of our scientific institutions that would do that. The problem that you have is compared to what, in given all of the tasks they're already assigned to do. And, you have a one-to-n priority. This is the way things are done in the government. And you start at the top and you do the most important things. And you run out of money long before you get to, out of ideas of things to do. And so then you got to prioritize and say, okay, where would I put this in the, in the prioritization? It's also a terrible risk in that if you place it too high, then folks like Congress are going to come along and say, well, if you got money for that, you must have too much money, so we'll cut you.
Yeah, so true. What do you think happened at Roswell in 1947, John?
Well, this is where I get into lots of trouble. unfortunately, I don't believe that one was a UFO. I think it has been pretty well explained. I think the Air Force did an abysmal job
of explaining that.
Providing information and the studies on it. But we do know a number of people. I like Jesse Marcel Jr. I think he's absolutely straight shooter, and he describes exactly what he's seen. And he and another sergeant, who we have very good reason to believe, actually did have their hands on the material. They were shown various kinds of materials, said, do you see it? And they said, yes, and they picked it up. And it was a substance. It was very terrestrial and very available at that time.
And very secretive, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was very, very secret. If it was what we believe it to be, it was a device that was basically looking to find out when the Soviets popped their first nuke. And as I mentioned, I'd been at Los Alamos, and I'd been through the Truth and Reconciliation. And in all of those, the people who came forward to talk, the first words were, it was a different time. And it is very hard for people today to imagine a world as it was in the 40s and 50s, where we honestly believe the Soviets were going to start a war with us.
There's no doubt about that. John, we're going to come back with more. By the way, next week, May 17th, 6 p.m., if you're in the Las Vegas area, National Atomic Testing Museum, which we've talked about before, John Alexander is speaking there with regards to his story that you're hearing right now. So go on out. It's May 17th, 6 p.m. at the National Atomic Testing Museum in Las Vegas. And we'll be back with more in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Indeed, indeed. Hey, by the way, we're going to take phone calls with Colonel John Alexander when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And we're back with Dr. John Alexander, PhD, talking about his work, UFOs, myths, conspiracies, and realities. John, science and science fiction writer Jerry Purnell just sent me a message and said hello to you, and that he agrees wholeheartedly with where you're coming from. So there you go.
Well, always appreciate support. I happen to know there's some others out there who don't agree with me, and guess that's what makes a horse race.
Well, that's absolutely true. Now, because of what you think about Roswell and what might have happened, what does that say about the work of the late Philip Corso and his work Day After Roswell?
Right. Well, as you know, I knew Phil long before the book came out. George Knapp had identified him, and George and Hal Putoff and I went out and visited him. We had him here for days. We then spent a lot of time going through all of the various claims. I liked Phil. That said, the claims just don't hold up when you get in and look into them very carefully. So the things about, you know, night vision, integrated circuitry, mm-hmm. lasers and all that, the history on that is very well known and very traceable.
He was who he says he was, right, in terms of his military career? Okay.
Yeah. No, I had spent time evaluating his history. He absolutely was who he said he was. Now, what a lot of folks don't know, and I do write to this in the book, is that I was actually with him about 10 days before he died. You know, he had one heart attack.
Right.
And then was recovering, and then suddenly had the second one. And it turned out my son, who lived in that area, was getting married, went down, and we spent an entire day together. And one of the things he said and actually showed me was that he said he needed to write another book to correct the mistakes. And I know there's been a lot of pros and cons as to what happened in the editing process. I, like some others now, actually had an original version of the book. And for instance, the beginning, that whole story on Roswell that appears in the beginning of the book, is not in his original notes.
Okay. That's interesting.
He was a great guy. And we actually tried to get him a movie deal, and he really got screwed, by the way.
Oh, yeah. And then the poor guy died.
Yes.
Before anything came about that. Well, all right. Well, it's worth asking you about that. You know, as I look at this thing, John, and, you know, we've all investigated various aspects of this phenomenon. And, you know, it's still puzzling to so many people. Yet, I keep coming back to, and I keep harping back to the fact that I think we've been visited by some E.T. group from somewhere.
Well, the issue is it E.T.? As I mentioned earlier, there are reports of humans interacting with non-humans throughout history. Where do they come from? How does this occur? Really, really hard to say. And I think UFOs bring a new piece to that. We also know that some of them just kind of mysteriously appear.
And disappear. Yeah.
And that's very, very difficult to reconcile. That's why I say we really need to be able to get the best scientific minds to work on this and not pay a cost in, you know, potentially losing your job or losing
your
ability.
Are you convinced that whatever people are seeing, they are indeed seeing something?
Again, not a simple question. It's hard to say because you get, again, this very wide range of reports. Let me take it out of the seeing, though. because I argue that basically every sensor system we have does pick up objects that basically shouldn't be there. So we're not strictly reliant on, you know, human observation, though I think that is a critical piece to understanding the complexities of these phenomena. And I use phenomena as a plural because I do suspect it's there's more than one thing going on.
Okay, well, you're not telling us what you think they are, but tell me this, John. Give me the possibilities that you've been thinking about.
Well, like everyone, I think we started with the extraterrestrial hypothesis.
Right.
That somebody came here, little gray guys from Zeta Reticuli or whoever. It is after I had explored this much more in depth and given a lot of thought to it that I started saying, you know, that just is too simple. And again, first of all, this is a global phenomenon. This is not something that just happens here in the U.S. We happen to concentrate on the stories and observations we hear. But when you start listening to interactions that have taken place in Russia, in South Africa, in, you know, pick your country, because it's all over the world, and you get this great variance in what are the observations, what kinds of creatures have they encountered. You know, I worked for Bob Bigelow and, you know, about Skinwalker Ranch.
Sure.
And some of the things that we saw there just, you know, boggle the mind, and yet we're absolutely sure it happened.
Okay. I'm beginning to, you know, understand a little bit more about where you're coming from. You know, and as I was looking at the advanced copies of your work when we were talking about it, I mean, it is strange. I mean, I'll give you that. It's very, very weird.
And one simple solution is going to fit all of the observations. Now, one of the problems with the skeptics is they go for a simple solution that only fits, you know, part of the facts, and they ignore the facts that are inconvenient. And frankly, the proponents do the same thing. They, you know, glom on to a solution and accept the facts that fit their hypothesis and ignore facts that fall outside of it.
Let's take a few calls here, John. We'll talk a little bit more while we have you. Asheville, North Carolina, it's Eric's turn. Hey, Eric, go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you.
Wonderful to be on.
Good.
I have a really, I think, is pretty important question. The moon, it changes every night. It wobbles. NASA claims it came off its eccentric axis 164 degrees. However, there's nothing to see here, kind of like Officer Barb Brady. They also designated a brown dwarf star, G1.9, as the cause, as it's coming into our solar system. But yet again, there's nothing to see here. Now, that brown dwarf star is... it looks an awful lot because from what I'm looking at, they're saying there's three planets with it. That kind of ties into the Anunnaki. And I'm 43 years old. I'm starting to think maybe they're still here.
Well,
and that kind of makes everything really make sense.
Maybe they are.
Everything's so topsy-turvy. And, I mean, holy cow.
These are the views, John, of Zachariah Sitchin. What do you think?
Well, Sitchin's work is certainly very interesting. Some of the things, I am not an astrophysicist and don't claim to be, so I can't really talk to astronomical bodies and the influence and whatnot. But, you know, the long elliptical course and return of the planet, certainly interesting hypothesis.
You write a lot about Edgar Mitchell in your book, UFOs, Myths, Conspiracies, and Realities. Here's an astronaut, been on the moon, and has told us all. He's been told by people he knows within government that we are being visited. You got to believe the guy.
Well, he and I are friends. We have sat on boards together.
Yes, you have.
We have had many, many discussions. I've sat down at his house, and he's been here, and We've discussed it, and we agree to disagree. Now, where he is, I know the source that he's talking about, who has totally denies ever saying such a thing. That only
that doesn't surprise me, though.
That well, it doesn't. However, you know, he is. Mitchell is a great American hero. I've just got to say that.
Absolutely.
And, you know, but he's very, very clear about that during all of his work in NASA, they never once had any indication of this. Now, I have a chapter about Apollo in there, and I think that that makes one of the huge arguments against it. You know, Apollo was about far more than going to the moon. Apollo, you know, we were using, you know, 4% of the national budget was in NASA at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Tiny, tiny fraction.
It was also to scare the Soviets, wasn't it?
Well, it wasn't just to scare the Soviets. It was to establish our technological dominance in the world. And we did that.
Yes.
And it absolutely nothing was left to chance. And I knew some other people in NASA. I've talked to other Apollo astronauts as well and other people. And it strikes me that, you know, if there were the slightest possibility that there might have been an encounter, say, on the backside of the moon, where people like to put it, you would have had contingency plans. You would have said, hey, invite them to the White House for dinner or whatever. But what's very clear is there absolutely wasn't a single plan. Now, you also point out, remember Apollo 11 and 12?
Mm-hmm.
When those folks came back, what happened? You know, we put them in isolation.
Yep.
And we were worried about microbes.
Yep.
And yet, on the other hand, we're saying we're not worried about full-up entities walking around. I have a problem with the logic.
Let's go west. Ted is there, Lewiston, Montana. Hi, Ted. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Ted. Hi, John. Very interesting show. I have a question about the disclosure of what the government is doing now. I found out the other day that the Department of Homeland Security purchased 450 million rounds of 40 Smith & Wesson ammunition, and I don't understand that at all. Am I really missing something?
I have no idea, and I guess you'd have to ask Homeland Security that.
That is true that they're buying that up. The question is why? Nobody really knows. Let's go to Buffalo, New York. Dan's with us, first-time caller. Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. The screener asked me if I was making a statement or asking a question. I'm hoping you'll bear with me for a minute because I have a little background. I got started, you know, with my interest in UFOs when I was in grammar school. And it sort of paid off when my whole neighborhood and I saw a classic flying saucer after, like, in the summer after seventh grade. And nonetheless, I ended up giving up on it as an interest because I now think that it's something well explained within the Judeo-Christian theology. And I think the guest may have alluded to this too, or the possibility. And you know, and this is the thing, and I honestly believe that governments gave up their own involvement or interest in pursuing this for the simple reason that after all was said and done, they still didn't know anything and couldn't do anything. So rather than acknowledge that, they just clammed up. And I think that makes sense and in a pragmatic way. I'll just leave the comments and replies open to the guests.
Okay, very good, John. And you know, and some believe these are demonic or angels. So I'll go ahead. I'll let you comment on his thoughts.
Yeah, well, that is a problem as to what they are. One thing I'd like to point out is something he mentioned about seeing them. I start out my book by talking about some that my brothers and my son have seen it on different occasions. The point here is that the vast majority of UFO sightings go unreported. So we only have a tip of the iceberg to look at. I think the governments I actually say Condon was right, but for absolutely the wrong reasons. But the question to Condon, and this is where I think the government sidestepped it, was, are UFOs a threat? And again, when you get back to all the possibility of things that could be studied, you know, where does this fit on that priority list? You know, where does this fit compared to cancer, to AIDS, to other phenomena that are occurring and occurring regularly and having, you know, observations by a substantial subset of the population?
Well, that's true. I mean, I think Stephen Greer was planning a disclosure project back in 2001, and it happened right around 9/11. He had to cancel that for a while, obviously. So it has to do with priorities.
Well, I think, you see, this is where I really disagree with most of the people. I argue that disclosure has happened and happened and happened. And it began with Truman, but you had Carter, you had Reagan. Clinton made inquiries on other sides, Gorbachev,
Nixon
officials, the Pentagon, Soviet hierarchy in the military, the Vatican. And my point is, how many times do you have to have them say this is real before people say, gee, it's real?
Yeah. Let's go next. We go east. John's with us, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Thanks, John.
Hey, real quick, I just wanted to get John's thoughts on the 2012 date of this year, December 21st. I've had this feeling for the longest time now, listening to this show, that the remote viewers who can't see beyond the date, it's because the calendar system is going to change, that this is the year contact is finally achieved, and what's evil about the situation would be that everything the world would accept instead of Christ, i.e. Antichrist, would be alien contact, so-called alien contact. So that's my question. That's my thoughts. I will listen off the air.
Okay, John. Yeah, you know all about remote viewing, Mr. Alexander.
I also know a fair amount about December 12th of this year, or 21st of this year. We actually were going through the Mayan country. I've traveled all across that area and talked to the Mayans. No, they didn't disappear. They're still alive and well, no fewer of them. And when you ask them what happens, they say, oh, it starts over again. I just don't see any big change. I will say a friend of mine, Stephen Schwartz, who was one of the early, particularly civilian remote viewers,
right,
done a lot of work on this, and they see a lot. I mean, what he does is have audiences work out, you know, 20, 50 years in the future, and they see a lot going on. The biggest changes that they see is kind of in the way of governance, kind of a retraction into smaller communities and self-sustaining efforts and things like that. But you cannot say that all remote viewers do not see beyond this date. They absolutely do.
Well, John, once again, you've done a marvelous job with this work, and I wish you well. And again, you've got an upcoming event next week at the National Atomic Testing Museum, which is an incredible museum. Even our own George Knapp has a little exhibit out there. And that's going to be May 17th at 6 p.m. for anybody in the area. So have some fun and give them some great information, John.
We hope to. Hope they can go to the website of the National Atomic Testing Museum and get the information as well.
Okay, it's Dr. John Alexander. His latest work, UFOs, Myths, Conspiracies, and Realities. And his website, of course, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It is johnbalexander.com. When we come back in a moment, we're going live to Amsterdam. Divine Intervention. David Wilcock is with us, and we'll be right back.